This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It is known as the skills gap, and we've heard it talked about here on Stateside. Employers who say they just cannot find the skilled workers they need to fill available jobs. But other voices speak up to question the sales gap. They call it overblown, even a myth. Let's talk more about this now as we welcome Luke Glaser, who's president and co-founder of Michigan Future, and George Erichek, who's senior regional analyst at the Upjohn Institute. Gentlemen, welcome.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
George, a couple weeks back, we had the head of the Michigan Home Builders Association on this program, and he said, boy, builders in Michigan are having a hard time finding the workers to meet their demand. It's slowing down the pace of home building. And then we hear experts like Peter Capelli at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania say this skills gap's a myth, and it's really more the fault of the companies. What are your thoughts on this?
My thought about the home industry, the home construction trade, is that it went through the ringer, and a lot of good employees finally said, that's it. This recession really hit the housing market extremely hard. And I think there's been a lot of people that have simply left the industry. So there is a shortage of workers because workers really want stability. And what they've experienced during this horrible crisis was 2 or 3 years that they've never seen before. Hopefully, we'll never see again. But will be very difficult to persuade them to go into an industry that is so cyclical.
Lou, is it more a matter of the kinds of jobs that we're talking about, that there are some jobs where, yes, there is a skills gap, like these skilled jobs in the home trades, and others where perhaps it's overblown?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think in general, we have ended up with an analysis that is largely driven by sort of some group of employers complaining that they want government to do something about what is their perceived problem, that they can't find the right people for the work kind of thing. And what's got lost in all of this stuff is that by and large, employers seem to have forgotten that they're buyers and sellers like every other marketplace. And that if you're a buyer and you don't have sellers, it's your responsibility to make the position more attractive. So employers, I think, don't want to do that, and yet that's the only way the market is going to work. So either wages have to go up, which is a way of attracting people. Work conditions have to change. You have to offer more stability. A lot of people in construction, I know, work sort of every once in a while 19-hour days and don't want to work 19-hour days. Mm. But by and large, to me, the danger in that story that's being told is that it is starting again to distort sort of the reality of what's going on structurally in the labor market, which is that more and more jobs require higher skills and particular college-educated skills, and that if you're looking for sort of stable work, working more, earning more, increasingly that's what is characteristic of folks who have four-year degrees, not folks who don't have four-year degrees.
You know, it is interesting. I got some emails from folks after we had that conversation on the skills gap and pointing out very accurately that it's way too easy to find folks in our state who've been laid off as companies downsize and they have the skills, they want to work, and they cannot find a full-time job doing that and paying what they've been making, so they wind up cobbling together a living with contract work and part-time jobs, neither offering benefits. And meantime, we have business execs talking about the skills gap. So are we saying we need to take a big chunk of salt with what these business execs are saying because it's really more about the hiring practices and what they're paying?
I think that's true. I think that many are still using temporary employment services. So what they do with the temporary employment agencies is it's a really nice way to see if the person can do the work. And if they can't, they can easily get rid of them. However, it provides increased uncertainty to the individual. The wage structures, as Lou has said, should be moved up. We have seen evidence now that wages are increasing. But I think it's a challenge is that it's a very tough sell for someone who is just coming out of high school to be sold into a manufacturing environment. They just have to look at the numbers. They have to look at the numbers of the cycle, the business cycle, and the long-term trend downward. At the same time, manufacturing is extremely important to our state. And so therefore, the survival of manufacturing does depend on a good workforce. So to me, the real challenge is if you're a manufacturer and you're trying to find that skilled worker you want, and you have to pay the wages, but also provide the work environment, which maybe you will not be able to do. The wages, probably yes. The work environment, you're going to be dependent upon your orders. And manufacturing orders, by definition almost, are cyclical. So yes, right now it's great. Next year, I bet it's going to be a very good year. Not so clear about 2017. So how do you say to someone who's 18, come work with me and I can provide you at least 2 years of employment. I sure hope to keep you forever. But I just don't know because I am victim to this business cycle.
Right. And a lot of these kids have grown up in families where the father, the uncle, and older brother worked in either manufacturing or construction and have gone through a couple of decades of frequent layoff, if not absolute job loss. It's very hard at that point to say to the kid, boy, this is a good path when they've grown up in a household where they and their family have sort of suffered from that. So, and then you add to it, so construction, which is even more seasonal work than the manufacturing, but both are very cyclical. One of the ways that construction workers used to make a year-round living was as Michigan had generous unemployment insurance benefits, which the corporate community has now basically shredded so that we've got the lowest unemployment insurance benefits now in the country. So once again, when you look at the package that employers have put together to attract people to the industry, it ain't so great. And when it ain't so great, you're going to get a smaller pool of entrants. I mean, that's just the way markets work.
So how do we fix this disconnect between employers saying we can't find them and, as you say, many workers, especially the younger workers, feeling pretty queasy about following in the manufacturing or the skilled trades?
Well, I guess my feelings in the long run is we have to look at the products being made. And that's where I think with Lou arguing that we really do need talent. We need design engineers and we need engineer designers. We need people on really high skilled levels to be able to produce the products that the changing world wants to need. And once those products are designed, hopefully they would be produced here. So my feelings is if you want a better manufacturing workforce, the wage structure has to always be maintained, but also the stability. The stability comes with product design, comes with the product that is being produced. And so therefore, when I think about engineers and I think about designers, industrial designers, I'm kind of think that they are the lifeline to that 45-year-old working mom who's working on the line producing a product. Because that job's going to hold as long as that product is up to market specs.
They keep turning out products that the company can sell and
that's
someone
right.
wants to buy.
And the only way you can do that is through product design and good engineering. So I see the whole skill spectrum being very key. That you have to have those engineers, you have to have those designers, which fortunately West Michigan has a lot of, and that if those folks work on the products that's being generated in the state, there's a much greater probability that their market share will be maintained.
So Lou, what is the role of schools in training these kids coming out to be able to take these jobs and not the ones that don't have the future?
Right. At least I make a distinction between K-12 and post-secondary. And part of the K-12 conversation is as much moral as it is economic. So the question is, you know, the country has been moving away from and now seems to have some questions about whether that was the right thing to do, moving away from sort of vocational training in high school. I think what the notion being, at least our notion, I think a lot of people's notion is that you really want all kids graduating from high school where they have as many opportunities to pursue as adults as possible, as opposed to high school sort of narrowing the opportunities for them.
So, for example, cutting vocational ed.
Right. So, you know, from my perspective, it is a good thing.
To cut vocational ed?
Exactly. So I think you want, at least from our perspective in K-12, you want to build broad skills, not narrow skills. Mm-hmm. So the Common Core is, you know, is at the epicenter of that movement. Common Core is sort of college prep on steroids. It really expects all kids in a K-12 education to build a very broad set of skills so that when they leave high school, they have all opportunities available to them. Post-high school, you want good vocational training program for those who want to go into those careers, as well as professional and managerial training for those who want to go into those careers. And it's interesting, if you look at kids who choose to pursue sort of more technical skilled trades occupations after high school, either at a community college or in a vocational training program, the biggest barrier to success is that they have not built academic foundation skills in K-12. These are now increasingly high-skilled jobs. If you're not able to do fairly high-order math, some reading, writing, communication skills, the fact that you want to be a plumber, you're not going to be a plumber. But not because you don't have the interest, but because you haven't built sort of the foundation skills. So we view K-12 education as building broad foundation skills in all kids and then allowing kids to specialize after high school in whatever they're interested in.
And not necessarily we hear quite the drumbeat for four-year degree. Not always.
Right. But you want all kids to have a realistic option to pursue it, as opposed to some adult in high school saying to your kid, you're not college material, but George's kid is college material. You really want the kid to make that choice, not some adult.
And I guess this is where kind of Lou and I do have a disagreement. It's a very modest one, but I think there's different learning styles, and some kids learn better hands-on. Right. And so they are able to work in a more technical environment and get the core training needs that's possible. So a lot of what we found is a lot of kids do very, very well in technical training in learning core applications of mathematics and even writing ability. So I think that high school should be more broad than maybe what Lou is suggesting. In fact, I do think technical training in high school can serve as an effective tool for education for some kids. Myself, I was not a hands-on guy. I was more into book reading and doing problem sets. But others who are equally smart really liked the idea of hands-on applications. And the real challenge we have, I think, is when we look in the future, and what you'd be surprised about is how there's so much strong disagreement about the future. What will be the jobs of the future? Right. And looking at BLS and what the Bureau of Labor Statistics is saying, 2025, there will be 50 million more jobs. 50 million more jobs nationwide. 17 million will require a bachelor's degree or higher. 33 million jobs will not. We should work hard to make sure none of those jobs are filled by Michiganders. I mean, the real challenge is there are a lot of bad jobs out there, and those bad jobs are growing. And if kids do not attach in high school, they don't really succeed in high school, there's employment opportunities for them. Those employment opportunities are going to be low wage for the rest of their lives. Right. And so what we really need with high school, I think, is to broaden not only the core subjects, but the technical training as well. If it works for a kid to work with his or her hands, to be able then to go and get a certificate or a two-year degree, let's do it. Let's not, so my feelings are that what Lou was saying may be a little bit too restrictive in high school, and the fact that there are different learning styles that we should pay attention to.
So circling back to where we began this conversation, if I say skills gap in Michigan, Lou, what does it mean to you, or is there one?
Well, I think if there is a skill gap, it is, you know, what wages are telling us is that we have too few people with four-year degrees. If you believe that price is what brings supply and demand into equilibrium, which is sort of the foundation of free market economics, the price gap between four-year degrees and everybody else is growing, not shrinking, which is the normal way of saying that we've got more demand than supply. So if there is a skill gap writ large, the skill gap is that we don't have enough people for the third of the jobs that are going to require a four-year degree. So let's just assume for the moment that the third's right, and I agree with George, predicting future jobs is really hard. It's
sure.
Not easy at all. But let's assume that a third is about right. At the moment, there's 28% of Americans who have a four-year degree. The difference between 28% and 33% is actually pretty darn big. So if there is a skill gap, that's where really the broader skill gap exists. It does not exist in the non-college or the non-four-year degree jobs. I believe that the evidence of a skill gap is rising wages, period. If wages aren't rising, you don't have a skill gap, where wages in general aren't rising at all. But where they're the highest and where the gap is the greatest is in the highest skilled jobs, not in these mid-skilled jobs, and certainly not in the low-skilled jobs.
Lou's right. It's market demand. If the wages aren't going up, there isn't any evidence of a shortage. Now, what we are seeing on the west side of the state, our wages are going up. So that's good news. Mm-hmm. But when you do talk to employers, I'm sure if you get employers in here, especially manufacturers, they will argue that they cannot find workers. I was telling Lou earlier that I've heard for the first time in 5 years the phrase, if you fog a mirror, you're in. It looks like manufacturers are just looking for warm bodies to be on the assembly line. That's a tricky proposition because that job may not last more than 2 or 3 years. My feelings are, yes, I think we are looking at a labor shortage that may be in more levels than Lou thinks. I think it could be on the short end as well as the high end.
Fascinating conversation. I guess as we try to think of how to put this together, is this fixable? And how important is it that it gets fixed for Michigan's economy, Lou?
Sure. So our central belief is that the asset that matters most to long-term economic growth is human capital, that basically this is, it probably always has been, but I think increasingly is a talent-driven economy. So I think it matters enormously. The only way this stuff is fixable, it seems to me, is going back to the four trade schools, which is, and I'm using that as an example of what I think is the right way to organize sort of occupational training, which is that companies take responsibility for the development of their own sort of talent pool as opposed to socializing it. I mean, at some point, companies decided they were going to get out of the business of preparing people for the work, and they said, gee, it's the government's responsibility. I'm not exactly sure that it is the government response. And the four trade schools worked wonderfully. Not only did they produce skilled tradespeople, but I've had the experience in working with Southeast Michigan suppliers, and a lot of the owners came out of the four trade schools. So it was pretty entrepreneurial as well. So if companies, instead of complaining about someone else preparing their talent, should really start once again to take responsibility.
George, final word for you.
I agree with Lou said, and I think the four trade schools were great. I also like us to spend more public money into public education.
Amen.
That I think that we have shortchanged K through 12, the community colleges, and the universities. And Lou is right. Talent is going to be the competitive edge to our state as all other states. And as long as we keep on starving the public schools on all levels of resources, we're not going to be very happy with the results.
Correct.
George Arakchuk is Senior Regional Analyst at the Upjohn Institute, and Lou Glaser, President and Co-Founder of Michigan Future. Thank you so much to both of you for coming in and talking with us on Stateside.
Thank you.